Chapter 38. Chapter 38. Rebirth by the Soul. We will now turn our attention, as we said, to the rebirth that must be carried out by the soul. Not the rebirth of the soul, but rebirth by the soul. You should take careful note of this, for the rebirth of the soul is only the beginning, and it has already been achieved by most of the pupils of the spiritual school. However, it must now be followed by a redirection of the soul towards its aim. Anyone who joins the spiritual school with a pure interest joins it as a seeker. Such a one has had little peace in his ordinary state of life, and by joining the school he proves that he is looking for rebirth of the soul. Indeed, his entry into the school proves that he has already entered such a phase. But as soon as the soul has been reanimated, it must be directed towards the one goal, the true aim of life. That is why the school speaks of rebirth by the soul. This is a process in which the soul takes the initiative and becomes the guiding principle in one's life, thereby breaking through to the aim. It is this process to which we want to draw your attention in order to make you enter the process of dissolution, which is without incident, or in other words, transfiguration, the ideal process of metabolism, in short, eternity. That is why you hear the cry of distress of the beginning, save your soul. For what would you gain if you possessed all the treasures in the world but suffered damage to your soul? The source of life, the place where the nucleus of life dwells, is the center of the microcosm, which roughly coincides with the heart. In a manner of speaking, the seat of life is located in the heart. The consciousness of the heart therefore differs entirely from the consciousness you possess in other parts of the body. The consciousness in the head, for instance, is completely different from the consciousness in the heart. In prenatal life, during the formation of the embryo, there is one little spot in the heart where life first begins to manifest itself. It is the place where the soul approaches and touches the being which is coming into existence. At this minute spot in the heart, life makes itself known for the first time. When a person dies, it is this same place in the heart where life holds out the longest. Everything that churns in your head, all those thoughts causing their storms, all the intellectual knowledge and other values you have collected, everything you assume and consider, day in, day out, only represents animal life, the life present in every atom of your body. The synthesis of these atoms causes the animal consciousness, which has nothing to do with the life present in your heart. The problem is whether this life really lives, whether it is indeed active, whether the microcosmic center can now really unfold itself and live in the highest sense of the word. That is the problem, and not only a psychological one, but also a physical one. The heart is the most important organ of the body, and its construction is truly miraculous. The constitution of the present-day human body proves that we can indeed speak of an emergency order body. The cell structure and the cell production of the heart sanctuary differ greatly from those of other parts of the body. The entire organization of the heart is designed to cooperate with the soul. When a child has just been born, its little body is still a subordinate factor. What really lives is the soul in the heart. The other phenomena of life are the result of the fact that one ray of the soul is making the tiny body breathe. In this way, the material body becomes the first garment of the soul. The heart corresponds with the soul, with the nucleus of the microcosm, and thus, via the heart, the soul manifests itself in the tiny, newly born body. The soul, the rose, is sevenfold, it has seven petals. Accordingly, the human heart is also sevenfold. The universal doctrine speaks of the seven chambers of the heart, three higher ones and four lower ones, so one can compare the heart sanctuary with the magic carpet of construction and speak of a triangle and a square. In the head sanctuary, there are also seven chambers. These are the seven cerebral cavities, or the seven candelabra. They will be able to begin their work and be ignited in the gnosis, in the light of the spirit only if the seven chambers of the heart unfold in harmony with the seven petals of the rose. The sternum, the breastbone, acts as an intermediary. The word sternum denotes something that radiates. The sternum, the breastbone, is a radiation factor in the cooperation between the rose, or the soul, and the heart. If the seven petals of the soul could manifest themselves in the sevenfold heart, the seven lights in the head sanctuary would begin to burn. Seven rays of the seven spirit would manifest themselves in the head sanctuary, which is destined to become the seat of the spirit. The seven aspects of the spirit would then be able to manifest themselves in the head in cooperation with the soul, and thus both would be manifested in the body. Spirit, soul, and body would again become a magnificent unity. However, the reality is quite different. The seven-branched candelabrum certainly does not stand before God in the natural head sanctuary. There is no question of an indwelling sevenfold Pimanda. The fact that present-day man lives proves that he is an ensouled creature, but by no means can all the seven rays of the soul manifest themselves in the heart sanctuary. At least three of the petals of the rose remain closed, namely, those of the three higher chambers of the heart. They do not operate positively in the human being of this nature. Only some of the four lower chambers of the heart are active, and that only to a limited extent. The consequence is that the sevenfold soul power cannot manifest itself in the body. The seven spirit cannot manifest itself in the head sanctuary, and thus the seven candelabra do not burn. The seven brain cavities emit a fluorescence, but it is an aeonian astral fire. Consequently, life is purely animal. Just imagine, a child is born as the product of a mother and a father. Its soul resides within its body, but cannot fully manifest itself in the sevenfold heart. The child begins to grow, and beside the physical body there appears the etheric double. As the child grows older, the astral body appears, and finally, also the flame of the mentality. But the flame of the mentality, the astral vehicle, and the etheric double are not at all attuned to the soul, but to the karmic possibilities of this nature-born human being. That is why he is as he is, and why the world is so miserable. What we want to explain is that the mentality does not correspond at all to the true soul, far from it. What one thinks has nothing to do with the soul. Something of the soul may perhaps now and then be able to make itself felt in the head sanctuary, but such weak expressions of the soul will mainly be repressed. So you can well understand that the consciousness of the human soul is totally disorganized, and that as a result, the true functions of the body are also disturbed. The growing body of the child and the other vehicles that develop out of it are entirely attuned to this disturbed soul. Can you now understand how it is that one's karma can manifest itself to the full as one grows older, and why it is that the influence of the parents and that of all earthbound ancestors makes itself felt in the growing child? As there is too little soul power, the soul which is of God cannot manifest itself. The consequence is always, without exception, a disturbance in the process of dissolution, in the process of metabolism. The manifestation of the soul is incomplete. The soul sins. That is why growing older leads to crystallization, which results in death, the disintegration of the form. The logic and inevitability of this process should now be absolutely clear. Your entire life is thus determined by the state of your soul. The state of your ego, your character, and your type, all are products of your soul state. If your soul is smothered and imprisoned from birth on, if, as a result, the seven chambers of the heart cannot open and only a minute spark of the four lower heart chambers can shine, your soul state may rightly be said to be in the state it was at your birth. In fact, most people remain in such a state throughout their whole life. They invariably act and live precisely as they have done from their youth on. They grow older and become independent. They find their place in society. But as far as their character, their essential nature is concerned, they are still the same little animals they were when they lay in the cradle. If you have gained a clear picture of all this, you may ask, if my state of birth, the state of my consciousness, determines the state of my soul, why should I strive after the liberating life? Why should I be in this school? Am I not a hopeless case? The soul cannot manifest itself in my body, can it? I am growing older, I am turning grey, I see death approaching. So let me eat, drink, and be merry. I can no longer change anyway. Let me make the best of it and wait for the end. Should you react like this, you would suffer from what the Bible calls the hardening of the heart. Let us assume that in your case the three higher petals of the rose are still closed, and that only one or two of the other four are open. So with you, one must speak of a negativity of the soul, where nothing but animal life exists. You breathe, you live, and that is all. But is it not so that you experience at the same time that your heart accuses you, that your conscience disturbs you, and that in an emotional turmoil you say, "What a sordid mess I'm in. What am I doing here? From early in the morning till late at night I just drag myself on, but what for? What is the meaning of my existence?" Why do you have such thoughts and feelings? Because your heart is accusing you. You are suffering pain in your ego. Sometimes you have to wade through the bitter grief of utter misery because you experience the horror of God-forsakenness. You live a burdensome life. One moment you feel guilty, the next you are full of opposition. One minute you are full of despair, the next full of grim determination, facing life as if with clenched fists. The intellect is unable to cope with the situation, and the will proves powerless at the most fatal moments. Perhaps you know of this from your own bitter experience. Has your conscience or your heart ever accused you? Do you know the unlimited pain which you forget only when you are asleep? Are you familiar with this experience and which haunts you from youth to old age? Well, if you do, be grateful beyond words. Thank God for this grace because it proves that your heart is not yet hardened. Be very grateful indeed if you still have this pain. The voice of the soul can still speak to you. The soul, the central point of the microcosm, groans and cries for help, for redemption, day in and day out, as it were. The radiation of the sevenfold spirit breaks through the sternum into the heart, and via the heart touches all the other organs of your consciousness. In this way, the voice of the conscience, the lamenting heart, the voice of the soul speaks. The structure of the heart, which has been so wonderfully made, ensures that the voice of the soul of the rose will sound to the very last breath. Unless you harden your heart, unless you allow your heart to grow fat, as the psalmist put it, you will always hear that voice. This is also what gives rise to the torment of remorse and the gnawing of the conscience. All this comes from the heart, as Mrs. Blavatsky once stated. If you can still hear the sevenfold voice of the soul, you will also be able to hear what moves this voice. It is the gnosis which wants to save you. Over the centuries, millions have listened to this voice which speaks in order to convert the hearts of men. Those who listened to this voice took it to heart, as the Bible testifies, "And she kept all these things in her heart," and "The Spirit of the Lord has sent me to heal the brokenhearted." As long as the heart is not yet hardened, you can take to heart the forces of salvation. You can convert your heart and preserve in it the essence of sanctification, provided you join the ranks of the brokenhearted.